Session number 14806, Eddie Murray, part 33.
I was just going on about, Churchill went to Harrow and Eden went to Eton. I don't know whether they buy each other.
Oh, there was a vast difference in there.
Ages and outlook.
Ages and outlook, yes, indeed.
Right.
Macmillan was more Churchill's age, rather than Eden's.
Yes.
At least he appeared to be so. Uh-huh. I don't know whether it's...
Yeah. And I forgot where. I think actually, having said all that I'm not sure that Macmillan didn't go to Eton as well. What about Jackie Onassis, Onassis, Kennedy and Callas? I think we haven't mentioned them.
They didn't come into his life very much.
He met Kennedy, though, didn't he?
On the Onassis yacht.
Yes.
Yes, and...
what was that meeting like? That was where Jackie first met?
That was just cocktails. It wasn't... Mm. I don't think it was even lunch. Mm. That was where Jackie met Kennedy and...
No, Jackie met Onassis.
Jackie met Onassis, I'm sorry. Yeah. But nothing... there was nothing in that relationship at all, as far as we were concerned.
Mm.
And Churchill was not... I know he talked to Kennedy, and they had a discussion, but... they were different worlds, really.
Yes.
He was there, an American with this superpower.
He was a congressman at that time. He wasn't
yes.
a president.
No, but he was an American, and America was a superpower. And Britain at the time was, really, I nearly said on the way down, which it probably was, I suppose. It was no longer a superpower anyhow.
Mm.
No longer a great power.
Mm.
And I think that was one of the things that Eden had against Churchill. That Churchill didn't let him have any power at all except as foreign minister when Britain was great.
Yes. So,
then after the war, of course, Britain began to go downhill. They kicked Churchill out, but he came back again. but it was no longer the power that it was during the war or pre-war. And then in 51, of course, Attlee gave India away.
Mm.
And so we were losing the Commonwealth. And Eden came in, on a sticky wicket. But as far as Kennedy and the Onassis, this was something beyond Churchill's comprehension. They were just names to him, really. In fact, Kennedy was a name to him.
Mm.
But the rest of the people gathered there for cocktails, they were just names.
Mm.
And they'd come to see him and shake him by the hand, but he wasn't in the least interested.
Mm. What when Kennedy was shot, what I know...
He called me at home. He called me at home. This was 7 o'clock in the morning. And I'd finished my breakfast.
You knew by this time that Kennedy had been shot and killed. All right.
I'm not quite sure about it, because I used to do it was a heavy day's job.
Yeah, sure.
Yes. And when I got home, I wanted to go to bed.
Yes, yes.
The children were there, and I
sure.
had to, So I can't remember even. I must have known. In any case, he called me at home, and he said he would like me to go in right away to see him.
And so you were at Hendon.
I was at Hendon,
and he was at
Hyde Park Gate.
Right.
But, of course, at Hyde Park Gate, there was a uniformed officer outside the door all the time.
Yes.
And frequent visits by the patrol car from Kensington Police
yes.
Station.
Yes.
There was no question of my leaving Churchill unprotected.
No.
And so, as the doors were all locked and the policemen there. But the next morning, of course, 7 o'clock, and so by 20 past 7, I was opening the door at Hyde Park Gate, and I went in. And there he was sitting in his bed with his breakfast. An ordinary breakfast of a couple of lamb cutlets and fried bread, sausages, and mash, probably.
But just interjecting, but you said that you carried him. How tall was Churchill?
Well, he'd be about 5'8" or 5'9" if he were able to stand up straight.
Right. Yeah.
But the years, of course,
I was surprised
taken him down to about 5'7" or 5'8".
Surprised you were able to carry him down those stairs you were describing earlier.
Oh, yes.
Eating all those pork chops and mash for breakfast.
Yeah. They're using that for the programme, by the way, because I've got film of it.
Of you carrying him down the stairs?
Me coming downstairs, assisted with by the bosun.
Oh, right.
You see? But it was me. I was in the front of the chair, you see?
Ah.
At the bottom of the gangway. So if you fell, I was responsible.
You were the heavy end.
And the bosun was sort of pulling him back.
Right. Okay, he phones you up and says...
So I dashed
down. But he actually told you himself... What did he say? He spoke to you himself, did he?
Yes.
What did he say?
He just wanted to see me.
He didn't say anything else?
No, nothing else.
Yes.
He would be glad if I came in right away.
Yeah.
And so I said, well, I'm on my way. And so I got in and went, and there was in bed with his breakfast. And
So he
asked me if I would like breakfast. Mm. I said, no, thank you very much, Winston. I've had it at home. And he said... Have you heard about the dastardly thing that they have done?
Mm.
And so I did know. And so I said, yes, so it's an awful thing, you know, and all the rest of it. Yeah. Terrible. And he says, so he said, I would like to see the chief officer of Scotland Yard. Commissioner of Police, do you see? So I said, no, I think you mean the Chief Officer of a Special Branch. If you think that's reasonable, yes. So I said, all right, I'll be in touch with him right away. But thank you for the offer of breakfast, you know. Mm. So I went.
That was a Saturday morning, wasn't it?
Probably.
Yes.
Possibly.
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
I think it was a Saturday. Well, it was a Friday he got shot, so it must have been a Saturday morning.
Must have been a Saturday.
Yeah.
So, no wonder I had to wait a while. And so I got in the car again and went to Scotland Yard. I had a special parking space, you know, from the Ministry of Defence. You've got no idea how difficult it was to get it. And yet, mentioned Churchill's name? It was there, where nobody else could go. And so I drove to the yard. As I'm walking up, I went to see the chief, Commander Burt, and I said that Churchill wanted to speak with him. He said, right, I shall be right across. I'll call the car and I'll see you there. And so I drove straight back. I signed the book and went straight back to report, you see, that he was on his way. And when Burt came, I met him, and I showed him in to Sir Winston, introduced him to Sir Winston and left them, the two of them there. And then I came out and I stood outside. And after a quarter of an hour or so...
So you brought the Chief of Special Branch round to Hyde Park Gate?
No, he, shall we say, followed me.
Oh.
Back to Hyde Park Gate.
Oh, I see. See what you mean, yes.
You see? He called his car.
Right.
And he had an official card, you see.
Yes,
so.
Yes.
So we met outside Hyde Park Gate. I showed him into the old man and then left them there. And 15 minutes later, Bert joined me outside. Apparently, Churchill had asked him if he'd like a whiskey and soda. And I think they'd had it, you know, and the valet had brought it. But they were alone when they talked then. Bert said to me, Sir Winston just told me that despite the fact of the assassination of Kennedy, Sir Winston requires no extra protection.
Really?
He's very satisfied with...
Really?
...with yourself on your own.
Really?
And then, as an aside, he said, and so am I.
Well, that's good. Yes.
And off he went.
Oh.
So, although we didn't discuss the Kennedy business, do you see, it was in his mind,
yes.
You see. And he thought that the Special Branch would be putting extra constabulary on or something like that,
yes.
Extra protection.
Yes.
And he didn't want it.
Right. Uh-huh. Kennedy. What about, he had emotional meetings a few times with Tito.
Yes, once on the Unassis yacht when we were off Split, and Split invited them to lunch. And I remember Tito on one side of Churchill and me on the other taking him up the pavement. It was a stone, crazy stone sort of pathway to the lodge, as they called it.
Mm.
And Tito was very friendly, and they got on extremely well, and there were loud bursts of laughter when they met and that sort of thing. And that was on the then on the yacht, of course. Mrs. Brotz was also there. I can't remember whether Lady Churchill was there or not. I've got a photograph, and photographs abound, of course, of the business. And then when Tito came to the to the Yugoslav embassy, which is in, which is a matter of yards, really, from Hyde Park Gate, just past the Albert Hall there,
mm-hmm.
or just on the inside of the Albert Hall, coming towards Hyde Park Corner. And we went there for lunch, and I met up with, what was he called, Colonel Mihailovich or something,
mm-hmm.
who was in charge of the protection of Tito. And it was then that Churchill had talked to him about his, or he'd seen Rufus the poodle, and the colonel said that the Sir Winston had talked to the marshal about dogs, and do you think it would be possible to buy some long-haired hunting dogs, game dogs? So I said, well, what you're talking about, probably setters or spaniels. So he said, setter probably, that they were talking about, and that Sir Winston had said that his dog person would be available. And so the colonel and I went down to the to where Rufus was usually poodled in Gloucester Road, I think it was. And there, you know, I sent a phone call there. And so we went there and we discussed the matter of setters. And this, the owner of the poodle shop, had a dog farm down at down towards Lingfield, yonder,
uh-huh.
down towards Chartwell.
Yes.
And so he would be delighted to take us down there. And so I squared it up, you see, that Churchill wasn't going out and that I had a couple of hours to spare, at least. Told him, you know, it was on his business or Tito's business that I was going. And so off we went down to I can't remember, the place, Lingfield, somewhere out in the country there.
So he got, he effectively got the dogs for Tito.
And so we came to an agreement about, or they came to an agreement about one of the red setters.
Mm-hmm.
The thing was, you see, they had wonderful dogs that were short-haired dogs in Yugoslavia, but when they went out hunting, the burrs used to cling to their skin,
you see, yes.
And they irritated, and they were no good for for further hunting. Whereas the long-haired terriers or long-haired, the red setters had long hair, and the burrs just clung to the outside of their coat and didn't touch their skin at all, you see.
Right.
And that was why they were interested. And so we took one, and then shortly afterwards, I got a letter from the colonel asking me if it would be possible to get in touch with the Yugoslav embassy and fix up for another a female, a bitch,
a bitch, breed, you see, yeah.
So that they could start a colony in Yugoslavia.
Did Churchill have anything terribly much to do with the Russians?
Not really.
No.
No.
After that visiting or anything. No.
I can't. I think we once went to the Russian embassy.
Right.
In a millionaire's walk there.
Yes. How did he, and what was Churchill's sort of attitude, feeling towards the Russians?
I feel quite sure that there was quite a lot of correspondence between Moscow and Churchill,
yes.
You know, apart from the official business when he was Prime Minister.
Yes.
I'm sure there was quite a lot of correspondence, and I'm sure that Churchill was also interested in what was happening out there, but he didn't participate actively.
Did he have a... When the Russians are mentioned, did he have any?
Well, he didn't like them, and I think there was somewhere he had a thing against against Eisenhower, because there was in his mind he seemed to feel that Eisenhower had intervened at Yalta, maybe it was later on, maybe it was at, what was it, Brecon Woods or something,
mm.
that Eisenhower intervened, and this was on the side of the Russians,
mm.
so that the Russians were able to organize the splitting up of Berlin,
mm.
which was terrible, whereas Churchill actually wanted the Russians stopped at a certain point,
yeah.
so that they didn't enter Berlin. But it, Eisenhower apparently was the fly in the ointment as far as that was concerned, which caused
yes.
a lot of trouble afterwards.
Mm.
But actively engaged in Russian business, no.
No.
Didn't seem to me.
What about Smuts? Was there ever any business?
Well, Smuts came to visit Chartwell, of course, early in, and it was in 1950.
Yeah. And yeah, how many times did he visit Smuts?
Only once.
Once. How was Smuts? What was he like?
No, Smuts was a trim person, you know, very trim, smallish, not very, you know, with a nice beard. What sort of a beard is it?
It's almost a goatee beard.
A goatee beard, that's
yes.
right. Couldn't think
very
of the word.
Topical, though,
I was thinking about William or something.
Yes.
And so there, and he was delighted, but I felt that they wanted to talk on their own.
Yes.
At Chartwell.
Mm.
I was there on my own. And so I left them there,
mm.
and I made sure that nobody else, you know, was going to disturb mm. them, even although it might have been staff wandering around trying to get a photograph or something like
yes.
that, you see. And I made sure, and so I
mm.
and I kept away too. But they were in very, very earnest conversation, and they seemed to get on extremely well
yes.
together. But Smuts was a very, very smart, I suppose it was a marshal's uniform.
Mm. And was he... Did you speak much, or what was it? I mean, I don't think I've heard. I've read his books, but I haven't.
Mm-hmm.
I
think I had about half a dozen words
yeah.
with him. That's all.
But did he have an English or an Afrikaans?
Oh, African. I'm sorry, English. Very good English.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. How did I suppose on this bit until we wrap up? There were probably two questions. One was. In the film, it goes on. Mr. Montagu Brown introduced Churchill to Onassis as they were looking for property in the south of France. And, well, Onassis happened to have a lot of property, so he's a good guy to speak to. Is that.
That's very feasible.
Uh-huh.
Very possible. Very possible. And Montagu Brown, of course, he's that sort of a character. He likes. Making good contacts.
Uh-huh, right.
Mm. I mean, he saw the great possibilities of Churchill and himself on the Onassis yacht. And, I mean, those are the Olympic Airways and all that sort of
mm.
thing. I shan't go any further into it. It's just a feeling that I had, and there was nothing except the things that happened afterwards, after Churchill's death. You know, well, a cruise on the yacht.
Oh, right, yeah.
So, there. Yeah. But, yes, there's every possibility that that was the way
mm.
it happened.
Mm.
You know, Randolph, I think, also says that he went, that he himself went onto the yacht for lunch and brought Onassis back, and that I'm quite sure is quite untrue. Mm.
And he brought Onassis?
Up to the Pausa.
But you don't think that's true?
I'm quite sure it's not true. I mean, I can't remember it anyhow.
Okay.
And that was the point that Montagu Brown was trying to make, as a matter of fact, when he phoned me up. Did it or did it not happen? Yes.
Right.
I agree with him.
Do you keep in touch with many of the people from that time?
I was going to tell you.
Who do you not keep in contact with?
No. I'm not in contact with them. If they want to contact me, as they very, very often do, you know, young Winston has been attached with me when Americans came across and wanted to do a thing on painting.
Oh, yes.
That's Sir Winston. And the only person in all the world that knew anything about Churchill and his painting, of course, was me.
Mm.
And so they came and we put them up for the night, although they weren't married. And they eventually got married and they've just had a child.
All right.
And they keep in touch. And so young Winston doesn't hesitate
mm.
to keep in touch if he wants to.
Mm.
And Mr. Montagu Brown rang me up.
Mm.
And at the time of the Radio Times business,
mm.
when I wrote up, you know, one of the other secretaries who'd been with Churchill for 5 or 6 years, she wrote to me, and believe it not, she put in the top right-hand corner in big letters, confidential. And all she said, you know, how good of it, you know, made to write to the newspapers about it and how she agreed. And then she said, apparently, I learned that Wendy is suffering from Alzheimer's disease or something like this, you know, suggesting that she wasn't responsible for what she said, you know, and that I shouldn't take it any further or something like this.
Yeah.
And I shouldn't mention it to anybody.
Yes.
You know, confidential.
Yes.
Yeah. Stupid.
Yeah. And what about, who do you say, Sergeant Williams and people like that?
Do they? Williams is dead.
Uh-huh.
Bish, whose place I took, his brother was, always acted as Megrae.
Rupert Davis. All right. Okay.
And, but Rupert's gone now, isn't he?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so I think, Bish mentioned, I can't remember, to somebody anyhow.
Mm.
And then Lettice Marston used to be one of Churchill's secretaries on several occasions. And she married, Flight Lieutenant Shillingford. And they moved, she was very strong Catholic, and they moved to Wells.
Mm.
And then Lettice died, and Lettice and I were always very good friends. We got on well together. And Shillingford got in touch to say that he'd heard that I was a Freemason, and we were in the same sort of degree and that sort of thing, and he would like me to join him along there. So I went along and I had tea with him. So Shillingford keeps in touch. Robert Hardy, you know, I've had
actor.
A couple of letters from him.
Yes.
And one of his, in a book about archery that he wrote and, signed inside.
Yes.
Dedicating it. And, but no, they know that if they... We've only got to get in touch, and I'll respond. I'll help. The International Churchill Society, the American president and organizer, the bloke that started the whole society many, many times ago, he keeps on sending people to me, and, you know, I had one the other day. That's why I've got a list of Churchill's likes and dislikes.
Yes. That'll be interesting.
Have I got your address?
Oh, I'll give you it in a sec. Yeah, I'll give it to you in a sec.
Oh, we're late.
The picture.
Sorry.
Yes, that's okay. The picture.
What picture?
The portrait.
The portrait.
Because I can remember about 10 years ago hearing on the radio.
Well,
somebody says
Mary Soames says it was destroyed by fire.
Yes.
At Chartwell.
Yes.
And I've got no reason to disbelieve it because the family were really up in arms against it. I thought it was a very, very good portrait. And he and I, Sutherland and I, argued about it when we were in the south of France. And we used to meet up, you know, about midnight or 1 o'clock in the morning at the Continental Bar in Menton by arrangement. And we used to argue about it. But I always told him I thought it was a very, very good picture.
Mm.
But I couldn't see why he cut the feet off and put it with a khaki background.
Mm-hmm.
They were my arguments.
Mm.
But the committee that chose Sutherland, they should have known what they were going to receive.
Sure.
I mean, he'd painted Moran, he'd painted Beaverbrook, and they were all similar portraits.
Mm.
He was portraying what he saw, trying to give the character that he... and Sutherland was probably a socialist, red-hot Labour, there's every possibility. And so he didn't want to flatter Churchill, he didn't flatter Churchill. And Churchill didn't resent the portrait at all. We talked about it, and it was taken to Buckingham Palace, and the Queen didn't make any,
didn't say she
comment
liked it.
She didn't refer to it at all. And Churchill, he didn't exactly think it was the worst, because he'd been painted on several occasions, you see, by other people.
Yes, but I mean, on that thing, that I mean, the two things, one is coincidentally, before I imagined that we would ever have a conversation, that I can remember about 10 years ago there was a radio program, and it, or maybe it was the it must have been the 20th anniversary of Churchill's death, that somebody said you'd burnt it.
Well, as a matter of fact, 1982.
Yes.
In 1982, there was a resurgence.
Oh,
of
that
interest,
must have been the
time, remember?
Yes.
And the newspapers were talking about it, and the newspapers came down to see me down in Bath. And there was a lot about it, and I told them that I didn't believe. I didn't think that it had been destroyed. I just couldn't understand that Lady Churchill or anybody else could be so wantonly destroyed,
yes,
work of art,
yeah,
a masterpiece. And that I was sure that Sir Winston, despite his feeling for the portrait, which wasn't exactly admiring, but I don't think that he would have wanted it destroyed.
No.
And then the Express, in its Hickey column, they went to see Harold Wilson about it, and Harold Wilson made a pronounced that he considered that the Scotland Yard detective that was with Sir Winston for many years, an oil painter himself, felt that he wasn't up to the destruction of the thing. But he says the Scotland Yard detective, Edmund Murray, now dead, you see, and felt that he wasn't up to the destruction of the thing.
Yeah.
And he would know, he would be the person to know most about it.
Yes.
I've got a feeling, I wonder if Harold Wilson thought that I was dead, when he was in power in 1965. Is that the reason why I wasn't mentioned in the honours list? If he thought I was dead, what was the use of putting me in the honours list?
Yes.
His bodyguard got an OBE or an MBE or something.
Who was that, Captain somebody?
No.
Dennis Kerry?
No.
He wasn't?
No, there's an F in it somewhere.
Oh, I don't know then.
No, can't remember his name. Not for the moment.
But there was I thought there was a Captain Brown at one stage, I was told.
Captain Brown was a friend of mine out in India.
Really?
No, captain's military rank was not recognised at the yard.
Oh, well.
There was a Commander Brown, a Commander Thompson, during the war.
Well, anyway.
He was a naval commander.
I can the function I was at in 1960.
He was Captain Thompson. Yes.
Well, it doesn't matter. Okay. It's a function I was at, and at that time, and Wilson and his body came. Anyway, look, I think that's about it for now. Maybe some loose ends to tie up, but we'll see. So,
at your disposal.
Thank you very much indeed for coming in, and we better pack up now so you have enough time to...
Yeah.